Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of Politically Speaking. If you are tuning in for the first time, hello, how are you? Glad to meet you. If you are a returning listener, again, hello, so glad to have you back. Today it is, we are shooting episode 12. Super excited. Again, we're down the rabbit hole of having wonderful special guests on our shows, a special co-host. If you are first tuning in, and some of you may be wondering, where is Emily? There was another person part of this podcast. She has definitely, I want to reiterate, she's still in the podcast. We have not kicked her off the island. If you heard the rumors, it is not true.
My sister did text me this week and said, what happened to the third girl that's normally on with you guys?
No. She is still a part of the family. She is just taking a good and well-deserved R&R, but she will be back. But in the meantime, we have a wonderful special guest with us today, which is the wonderful Jay Parmley, the executive director of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Welcome, Jay, to the show.
Thank you, Erica and Kirsten. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. I remember there was a time where I was on your show, you know, and now look at you. Full circle.
Yeah, well, my show's not like your show, so I'm happy to be
here. Jay, let's go ahead and start off. Catch us up. What is going on with the South Carolina Democratic Party? And for those new listeners, explain exactly what it is.
Great. That is a great segue. Great intro. Tell them about what the Democratic Party's doing. No, it's a good opportunity. So, listen, every state in the country has a Democratic Party, a Republican Party. It's often, people talk about it as if it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's like, oh, the Democratic Party does this, or the Republican Party does this. But what it really is people. It is people. And it's the organization of a political party. So every state has one. We have the South Carolina Democratic Party. We have 46 counties in South Carolina. We have 46 county Democratic parties. And we have local, even in some places, in some counties, Charleston or Beaufort or other Greenville, we have clubs even within the county that sort of make up what is the organized part of the Democratic Party. But, you know, the goal of the party is to, I say, recruit and find people to run for office, help those people run for office, win elections. And then there's this other piece of advocacy, right? Like, how do we stand up and speak up? We're not in the majority in South Carolina. So, you know, we've seen it this week. We've seen it for months now of how important it is when you're in the minority in terms of government. I do not believe we are in the minority in terms of our positions, but I do believe, you know, there are more Republican legislators and members of Congress right now. So we have to help people who might not be active within the party every day, within the party structure, but they're still, they vote for Democrats, they care about our issues. How do we get them engaged in the political process to advocate for things we care about? So that's what we do every day. And since January, since Trump took office, we haven't stopped. I mean, it is people marching, people protesting, people giving testimony at the State House, people writing their members of Congress, people calling their members of Congress because, hey, there's got to be a better way than the way the country's running today. And so trying to get people engaged. And very quickly, I will tell you that one of the, I think, most, I don't know about exciting, but sort of interesting thing we're doing is we've launched this Democracy Builders Project, where we have asked people, not, you don't have to have an office or a title in the party, where we just ask people, hey, would you commit to talking to 35 to 50 Democrats in your community, in your neighborhood? And we've had almost 900 people statewide sign up to say, yes, I'll do it. And a lot of these people are brand new. Now, that may not sound like that's a lot of people. I mean, for us, that is a lot. Right? A lot. Say, I will spend the next 9 or 10 months talking 2 or 3 times, you know, spread out, write a postcard, go knock on their door, go have a conversation. And we provide the scripts. We provide the people. And what it really is a way to just engage Democrats with other people who I'm going to say are Democrats who might think like them, but maybe they don't vote all the time. Maybe they just vote every once in a while, but they tend to be Democratic, mm-hmm. but they don't have a connection to their party. And so we're trying to bridge that gap with getting everyday South Carolinians who lean our way. Maybe they never thought, I mean, we don't register by party in South Carolina, right? So you're just a Democrat because that's what you say you are. Or gosh, I might identify with these issues and that's what Democrats tend to stand for. But on a couple of these issues, I might be libertarian or I might actually agree with the Republicans. That's okay. But we're not having those meaningful conversations with our neighbors. This Democracy Builders Project is a great way for everyday Democrats or people who just give a damn about their community, you know, like to say, I will visit with these people in my neighborhood. So that, to me, aside from a lot of enthusiasm around the state, we already have a lot of candidates announced that they're running for next year for the legislature. I mean, this is unheard of, people already running for the legislature. And then we have some special elections we've won and some special elections we still have to sort of ahead of us in two legislative seats before the end of the year. So a lot going on. So long answer to your question.
No, great answer. And my favorite part of your answer was the word you said, try, because I feel like that's the biggest message right there is putting in the effort and try. You may not always get the results you seek, but nonetheless, it's the fact that you're putting in the effort and you're trying. So I feel like that is what's going to continue to get the message out there and spread it. The message. And then you're working and trying to figure out how to even get the message out there. You are a person of many, many hats, man. Like, if you know Jay, he wears so many hats.
We're a small operation, you know, by operational standards. And when you really think of it, people like to vilify the Democratic Party just because it's something, right? Oh, the Democratic Party. Well, we're just people. And the majority of people inside this party, they are volunteers. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not paid. Like, you know, I laugh every time they start talking about paid protesters. With what money? We barely have enough money to pay 6 or 7 staff. I mean, why? Exactly. We're not protesters. So, say, people who show up to be a delegate at a county convention or a delegate to a state convention, they're all volunteer. All of our county party leadership, all volunteer. Both of you Clyburn Fellows, both of you have been through our leadership program, but like everything's volunteer. Everything, people, you run for office, whether it's party office or whether it's real office, you know, elected office. This isn't real because sometimes it's all volunteer. All of it's volunteer. And no one's you're not getting rich off this, you know? So
losing money.
It's the other way, right?
Yeah. So
I just view this as trying to give an avenue, lane, a way for people who want to get involved for lots of different reasons, a way to get involved politically, whether it's advocacy, running for office, helping somebody win, all that matters. We're a small operation with trying to do a lot of work. And, you know, it's a lot of work.
I didn't even know that there was like a state party. The first time I even heard about something like that was from me volunteering and coming to South Carolina. And then once I heard that South Carolina Democratic Party, I was like, well, what does that mean? And then once I started to hit those links and join in, I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't know that this was a thing. So I thought that was pretty cool.
A lot of people don't, Erica, or they think it's something they can't be a part of. Yeah. Oh, who are those people running? Mm-hmm. Well, if you knew how people ran for office, I mean, y'all, they just show up and file. I mean, it's some people are asked, right? But I mean, I think everybody thinks it's this mysterious machine system that they don't know about. We have our county parties. Anybody can show up. Our county conventions, if you just want to show up and you're a registered voter and you profess and sign on the dotted line that you're a Democrat, you have a vote and you have a voice. And so people don't know who we are. I still have people that believe I am paid by the government. They think that the Democratic Party is an extension of the government. And I'm not. I mean, I mean, we try to get people elected to the government, but I don't get a budget from an appropriations from the state of South Carolina. We raise every dollar that we spend. And so from contributions, from people, we have to ask them for money to operate. A lot of people think the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, pours all this money into these states. They're helpful, but we get $170,000 a year from the DNC. Let me tell you, that does not operate a headquarters, pay staff, fund campaign. It's nice, but it's not enough. So literally, people say, "What doesn't the government pay your salary?" No. I mean, and I don't mean to say no because you're an idiot. I'm like, no. Parties are sort of like nonprofits, and people may not know where they are or how to get there, but maybe 95, 98% of the people that have positions, if you will, positions, leadership within the party, they're volunteer. And everything we do, we raise the money for to do. You know, whether I'm helping the Greenville Democratic Party get a bus to come here for a protest or going to testify at the, and I didn't. I mean, they got their own bus, but I'm sending them a little money to help make sure that, you know, they've got money in their coffers. Or if we're helping a candidate run in, we've got a bunch of municipal races right now. So even nonpartisan races where we have Democrats that are stepping up. You know, we're maybe doing some digital advertising, or we're sending a piece of mail for them, or we're just making a contribution to their campaign. All of that is money that we have raised from people who have probably given us $5, $10. There's no George Soros writing the South Carolina Democratic Party $100,000 or $1 million. That doesn't happen. Real life at our level.
So I'm so glad that you even addressed that. Because I think
it's
part of the problem and the misinformation or the assumption. And it's like, no, it's far from it. I think they're trying to focus on how can we support you? You know, say, how can we support you in running and registering to vote, getting out, getting all the information and things like that. So definitely glad that you took some time to talk about that.
I mean, I look today and we've got 49. I mean, there's more than that, but I had a list of like 49 municipal races that are in November, the November 4th election day. Most of them are nonpartisan. Now, Greenville isn't, Aiken isn't, Georgetown isn't. There's a few that are partisan Democrat, Republican races, but most are nonpartisan. But we have 49 candidates who have asked us for help.
Wow.
And well, and that's, and some of them are teeny, teeny, tiny places. Mm-hmm. I mean, teeny, tiny towns, and some are not. And none of those folks are in Charleston, which is big, and they've got races going on right now, but they're nonpartisan. 49 people. Well, we're today sifting through trying to figure out what can we do to help them. Can we help them with texting? Can we help them with phone calls? Can we help them with mail? Can we help them with whatever it is? And then what does that take? And so that's just one example of something that comes up that people may not even know we're really engaged with. But that takes money, time, talent, and effort to make that happen.
And for anyone
that's a lot of different things, but hey, there's a lot going on.
I do want to plug in, if anybody is does not have heard, go to the website, South Carolina Democratic Party. There is all type of information, different clubs, I call them clubs, that you can join from the disability, Hispanics, like the Black.
We have our caucuses.
Of those caucuses. Yes, there is so many different things that is going to fill your cup. And I say fill your cup because it's other people that have also gravitated to these same caucuses that have similar morals, similar values, similar discussions, similar needs. So if you're trying to find your community, definitely check out the South Carolina Democratic Party. Go down the rabbit hole. And then if anything, you'll see Jay's beautiful face on the website. So you can tell.
I was going to say, I don't think his picture's on there.
I thought it was up there. I thought that's how I saw it.
It might be there, but it's scdp.org. That's you can sign up to be a democracy builder. You can find your local county party. And folks, most of these county parties meet regularly, not all of them, but you know, they have a monthly meeting or a quarterly meeting. Anybody can go. This is not a select, rarefied club. I mean, sometimes it can feel that way, I think. And particularly when you're new, but you find out that when you go to these meetings and you go to these events, and sometimes they're boring as shit, right? But I mean, they're just boring, right? They're boring. So the thing is, but sometimes they're not, but it's new people are wanted, welcomed, mm-hmm. and you should be. They should gravitate towards you quickly because, A, you're a new person. That's but exciting. Go, you know? Yep. And then you learn, listen, anything has some politics to it. Even the party has politics. Our internal, you know, people squabble over who might want to be the county chair or who might want to be a state party officer or whatever. And sometimes that's, you know, feels really unpleasant. But I don't think it should, but it does sometimes. But it's not, this is not an exclusive.
I think you're free. Isn't it free to join all of these?
Free. Everything's free. Yes.
Yeah. Just put your email address. Click on the link.
That's all you have to do. Crazy. Show up. Stuff's in person. Yeah. You know, you might get asked for, you know, if you sign up, give us your email, you will get a fundraising email, but you'll also get others, right? That's not all we do. We don't just pound you. Give us $5, give us $5, mm-hmm. give us $5. We're also saying, hey, the Republicans have proposed the absolute most horrific abortion ban in the history of the world, and here's what's going on. Or Donald Trump, government shutdown, or whatever it may be, we're constant. Or here's who's running for office. We're trying to provide information. So it's not just give us $5, although we need it. That's not the purpose of getting you to get involved.
Exactly.
Well, and I think one of my questions real quick. Oh, yeah. I know, Erica. For the political junkies like myself, you guys had a DNC meeting recently. Any word on 2028, first in the nation?
We did. That's, Kirsten, I didn't.
Anything you can share,
yes. I guess. I like what you did there, Kirsten.
You know, we've been fortunate, just to give everybody a tad bit of history. We've been really fortunate in South Carolina that we have been an early primary, both on the Republican and the Democratic side. So the way this works is the Supreme Court years ago said parties determine the presidential nominating process, not the states. So the Republican Party has a process. We have a process. It's all based on primaries, but the Democratic National Committee sets the process. So they allow 4 states, sometimes 5, to go early. And since 2004-08, we've been early. We were first in the South. In 2020, we got moved to first in the nation. And their DNC does this every 4 years and sort of looks at this. So they're looking at it again, where they've just started the process. We're months away. I mean, honestly, probably a year away. And we are fighting tooth and nail to stay first. We believe we deserve what I call a real primary, you know, like this real opportunity to say Black voters matter, rural voters matter, and Southern voters matter. And so we should go first. I mean, we're going to fight to stay in the early window regardless, but we do want to go first. So I think it's months away from a decision, but the process has started. So here's what they've done. They're going to announce the process for states to sort of file and give their materials to the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee that makes the decision. So I think they're going to do that by December, and then we'll probably have to turn something in by early next year, and then they'll work through their process. So we're months away, but I feel good about where we are in the process. South Carolina Democrats, not only do we show up, but we pick the winner. And I think that's something nobody else can say. Like, we nail it every time. Only one time we do what?
I like how you put that. That's right. In case anybody in the back needed to hear that reminder.
Yes. Sorry. Yes. We nail it. We get it right. Only one time did we not. And we voted for John Edwards, who was picked as VP. So we still got it right. So, you know, we need to keep our spot.
As a political junkie, of course I agree, but
no, it's a big deal. I mean, we've already had. Go ahead.
Well, speaking of big deals, let's segue into Kirsten, your segment. If you want to go ahead and open us up with that one.
All right. So, you know, we like to talk about what's going on in the state, the country. So right now, the big news in the country is that the United States is in a government shutdown. And of course, we plan to talk about why that is. First, I thought it's important to let our listeners know what a government shutdown is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I forget that a lot of the political things I know aren't known by everyone. My sister texted me. I talk about my sister texting me all the time, but she clues me into what the normal people are thinking. But she texted me this morning and she'd seen some things on TikTok about a government shutdown and wanted to know if it was true or not. So I said, all right, we'll just start with the basics on a government shutdown. So what is a government shutdown exactly? Under the Anti-Deficiency Act, federal agencies cannot spend any money without an appropriation or other approval from Congress. There are 12 annual appropriation bills Congress must pass, and when they fail to do so before the end of the fiscal year on October 1st, federal agencies must cease all non-essential functions until Congress acts. There have been 14 gaps in federal funding since 1981. Only four of which were operations were affected for more than one business day. Most have occurred under a divided government when the White House, House, and Senate are not controlled by a singular party. The longest government shutdown was during Trump's first term from December 22nd, 2018 until January 25th, 2019, a total of 35 days. During shutdowns, many federal employees are told not to report for work, though a 2019 law made it so those employees are paid retroactively when the shutdown ends. Government employees who provide what are considered essential services, such as air traffic control and law enforcement, continue to work, but don't get paid until Congress takes action to end the shutdown. Things like Social Security and Medicare continue to flow because they are authorized by Congress in laws that don't require annual approval. So why hasn't Congress passed all 12 appropriation bills this year? Although Republicans control both Congress and the White House, they need at least 7 Democrats in the Senate to join them to pass a spending package. Democrats are demanding, and I'll say rightly so, that any funding bill contain an extension of the Enhanced Affordable Care Act premium subsidies that are set to run out at the end of the year. These subsidies help Americans who don't receive health insurance through their employer be able to afford insurance through the marketplace. And with this particular government shutdown, the White House Office of Management and Budget, OMB, has already begun signaling that they are using a totally different playbook with this shutdown than others before it. They've already begun urging agencies to downsize workers in programs whose funding has lapsed and which don't align with Trump's priorities. Trump said today that the government shutdown is an unprecedented opportunity to enact sweeping cuts to agencies and to halt billions of dollars in funds to Democrat-led states. On social media this week, the OMB has said the government can cut jobs and programs rather than just furlough workers during a shutdown. Also, normally the OMB posts agencies' shutdown contingency plans on its websites. This time, those plans are only listed on each agency's individual website, making it harder to assess how the Trump administration will handle the shutdown and which activities it will deem essential. The Trump administration is also using federal tax dollars to blame the shutdown on Democrats by posting banners at the top of government websites stating the radical left has shut down the government. On the Department of Agriculture's website, it says Trump has made it clear he wants to keep the government open and support those who feed, fuel, and clothe the American people, but that the government was closed due to the radical left Democrat shutdown, which is ironic because Trump has been slashing government employees and programs since he took office on January 20th. But, you know, so, of course, blaming Democrats for what's going on. But Democrats want to really focus on what Republicans are doing to people's health care and the cuts that have been made to Medicaid. And so this radical move might be necessary to highlight a lot of those things. But anyway, so what are y'all's thoughts? Obviously, you know, government shutdown, not that good, but what would you guys add to this conversation?
Well, what are your thoughts, Jay? Well, and then I'll go.
No, I'll add. This is sort of unprecedented, right? Like where the Republicans control the White House and the House and the Senate. And they could get 7 Democratic votes in the Senate if they would just do one thing, and that's fix this cuts to the tax credits on the ACA or Obamacare. And so the reason that the Democrats are holding firm is there are 22 million Americans whose health care could double, their premiums could double if this goes into effect. And in South Carolina, there's 632,000 people that are on the exchange. I'm one of them. And get a tax credit. I mean, that their premium is less because it's based on your income and all of that. But there are 57,000 people in South Carolina who just lose their health insurance. I mean, that is, and that's not insignificant. So that's what this fight's about in the House and Senate. Is Democrats are holding firm that we want to reopen the government, but we also want to protect health care. And that's the sticking point. You know, I think the country's on our side. I think every poll I've seen, it's like 70% of Americans mm-hmm. agree that these ACA tax credits should stay in place. And the fact that the Republicans did this in that stupid, big, ugly bill, you know, that mm-hmm. is just unconscionable, which they were able to do without Democratic votes because of the way that they did the bill. This requires 60 votes, not just a majority. And they don't have 60 votes in the Senate. So it's a bunch of BS that, you know, yeah. that the Republicans say this is a Democratic shutdown. You have 53 votes in the Senate. You need to do what you need to do to get 7 more votes. So, you know, you made a mistake. That big, ugly mm-hmm. bill is screwing a lot of people. I mean, we haven't even talked about farmers. There are 25,000 federal employees that live in South Carolina. And, you know, they're all right now, most of them not working. And so it just, is it worth it? Right. So everybody's at this big impasse, but that's what the Democrats are standing up for is the health care. That's the line we've drawn in the sand. And I think Speaker or Leader Jeffries and Leader Schumer, you know, regardless of what you think about what they're doing every other day, they're at least holding firm, and the Democrats are holding firm on this.
So yeah, they're showing up to work where the Republicans are on vacation.
Oh, yeah, we're there. I mean, we're there ready to work. Republicans aren't even in town. Paid, y'all. Members of Congress get paid during a shutdown.
What? I didn't know that. Why?
Oh, they get paid. They did that themselves. So they get paid. It's a 2013 bill, maybe. I can't remember, but they get paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one guy must be a senator. I don't know. Some guy from, I don't know. I think he's from New Jersey. Anyway, one lawmaker said he was giving up his salary or his pay during the shutdown because he didn't feel like it was right for him to get paid while these federal employees are not.
Correct.
So, and this is a Democrat doing this, clearly, but in case anybody was confused.
Yep.
I think it's just disheartening to the constituents, like the everyday people that struggle with even just registering to vote. It's like they see things like this and it's like, man, it's like you're making it so much harder to prove why someone should even get involved, why they should even care, because it's like you're taking their power, you're taking all their lights to like how they pay their bills, like they're, but it's like this is why people feel like their votes don't matter. This is why they feel like, why even bother when the government is just going to do whatever they want to do anyway. And then when they see this back and forth, and the back and forth is about our lives. It's about, like you said, our health care. It should be the back and forth that's going on should be just nonpartisan, because all of this affects everybody, regardless if you're blue, if you're red, if you're yellow. It's going to affect everyone. So for me, it's more of the perception that, man, we can't even come to the table on important topics that are going to impact our constituents. Like Jay said, the volunteers, the people that we're trying to get involved, we're trying to educate, we're trying to get information. But it's like, man, we can't even just come to the table about things that for me should just be nonpartisan. It should just be what's understood, don't got to be explained. And I feel like as people are seeing this going on, they're just having to reflect on themselves, like, man, like it just feels like an air with that balloon is just slowly coming out of. If it just feels like defeating, and then it's like so quick for the Republicans, and I have to say Republicans, I try to keep myself neutral, but I gotta throw out the facts is very, like, disheartening for the Republicans to say instantly it's the Democrats. It's like, what? Like, no, is you also not helping out the situation? And then to put it on their websites, like, the, you know, the Democrats. And I'm like, why? They're more focused on delivering the message about the Democrats are doing this. But it's like, no, deliver the message about what are you doing to help us? Deliver the message or what are your next plans in place? Like, deliver the message on how long are we going to be in this shutdown? Like, these are things that you should be delivering to the constituents, but you're so focused on making sure that your constituents are there to blame, place the blame. And it's like, my gosh, do y'all have nothing else to do? Like, some of y'all voted for these people. So it's like, you stick beside, like, these people, because these people are crazy. But I just feel like it's just very disheartening. And it feels like a joke. And that's the part that's just overwhelming to me.
Well, and let's remember, the choice the Republicans made in that big, ugly bill was to screw 22 million people on health care, but they gave $4.5 billion in tax breaks to the wealthy. So that's the trade-off here. These 22 million, all right, if you're on the exchange, and you receive any kind of a subsidy, meaning your healthcare premium is lower than what it would be at a market rate, you're not a millionaire. You're not. And you could be making 20,000, well, probably 30 or 40,000 or 50,000. Even if you're making 100,000, 150,000, your healthcare premiums could really be terribly expensive. You're still probably paying $1,000 a month or more for healthcare, being less than what it would be at the full market rate. So these are not millionaires. These are everyday working people who need health care. But screw them. But let's give our most rich friends a tax cut, a tax break. And they don't need it.
Right.
They don't need it. And they're not on the ACA. And even if they are, they're not getting a subsidy. It is truly, I think, one of the most, and it frustrates me, because I'm not against rich people. I want people to be rich. Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, I want people to be able to make money. But there is a fairness to this system, and the majority of America, this is a moral, I really believe it's sort of a moral cause, because healthcare, you know, people shouldn't die in this country from neglect on health.
Because you can't afford insulin.
And we haven't even talked about the people who receive food assistance. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands in South Carolina that are receiving food assistance, and they're not poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not the homeless. They're not poor. These are,
the working poor.
Right. And so I just think all this is a big moral and ethical dilemma. And people of good conscience, I don't care, Democrat, Republican, need to stand up for this and say, enough's enough. Uh-huh. And Donald Trump and this MAGA Republican majority will do, they're destroying working men and women. And I just think a cause worth talking about, and I think we're going to talk a lot about it in 2026. This really points home. This isn't about a bunch of nebulous stuff. It's about my health insurance, your health insurance that will go up, because we did that so some rich guy or gal, or person, maybe I should say rich person, is going to get a tax break.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it concerns me because it affects me. I mean, I have insurance through my job, but my husband has it through the marketplace, and he has diabetes. So if he doesn't have insurance, I mean, there's no way we can afford insulin, going to see the doctor, anything he needs literally to live. And then, even if you don't have a moral compass behind all of this, when people lose their health insurance, it makes premiums more expensive for everybody else, right, even if you're not on the marketplace, because they got to recoup the money. So,
and sick people, you know, it doesn't matter if you can pay or not. You still need to go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just forcing healthcare costs to rise instead
for everybody
of fixing it on the front end and saying, hey, everybody should have access to high quality healthcare, period. And it shouldn't bankrupt you to get it. And, you know, what kind of a country are we? Well, right now, That's a big question. You know, what are we and who are we and what are we going to be? And that is bigger than a big D Democrat. It's actually a little D democracy. What kind of, you know, what are we going to be? And I just can't imagine in 2025 we're having this debate.
Right.
I mean, I don't get it.
Baffling.
I mean, it's, I don't get it. I really don't.
And then they mentioned like just federal employees, like they mentioned a high number. They said like there could be up to 750,000 federal employees who are getting like furloughed like daily. And I'm just like, just like mind blowing. And then some people are still responsible, or they still have to be responsible to go to work, but not get paid. It's like, right. Who wants to go to work, but not get paid?
Right. Here's the other thing. Essential employees have to show up and they're just not getting paid.
Right.
But who gets paid? 35 members of Congress and 100 senators. They get paid. Mm-hmm. They get paid for not doing their job.
Mm-hmm. And the last government shutdown, the TSA employees were calling out because they're like, I'm not getting paid right now. I'm not showing up to work. Mm-hmm. So then you've got problems with flight delays.
Yeah. I mean, you want to get on a plane?
No.
An air traffic controller who's being forced to work?
And crazy. Or, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're professional. Don't get me wrong. But like, come on.
Mm-hmm. For real. And it's like you said, all of us working people are getting penalized, but the ones who are making things into law are still collecting coins. They're still like getting paid. They're getting paid to make us not get paid. Like make it make sense. Like, and then the fact that they get a tax break when we're the ones who need the break. Like, come on, somebody. Like,
Well, here's my solution. Run for office and help us fix this. That's my solution.
That's
or help
right.
somebody run for office who can help us fix this.
Yes, and join your local Democratic Party. Okay, but yes.
That's right. Get in the street. This is important.
It is very important. And I when Trump got into office this year, I was just like so annoyed. But I'm glad that all, and I use the word loosely, glad. I'm glad all this stuff is happening so some of these people can wake up. Because for some reason, I don't know what they thought was going to happen when he got into office, but so much has happened and we are not even through the first year. Like, we're still only halfway through. And like, literally every time I turn on my TV, every time I'm like just opening up my device, it is something else going on. And it's like, my gosh, sir, like, do you just wake up with violence or something? Like, this is crazy.
I think he does. I think he does. I think it's vengeance. It's all revenge. It's all vengeance.
Everything.
And you know, listen, we should have a vigorous debate in this country on immigration policy. That's fine. But when we tried to, and we actually had an immigration bill that may have worked, Donald Trump, who was just a candidate, told the Republican lackeys in the Senate, don't do this.
Yes.
Because I truly believe if I can just win, I'm just going to send ICE agents into communities. And now it's not just ICE agents. It's the military he's sending into communities. And guess what? He's not cherry picking. He's not sending these into Republican communities. He's sending these in Los Angeles and Chicago and Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes.
I've been there. There's no Portland, Oregon. There's no violence going on there. This is crazy. But think about that. We have a government that is sending troops into communities to round people up. For what?
Right.
Yeah.
For what? Right. And do we think that's okay? I don't. And that's just one example. It's just like your head turns every day.
Right.
I mean, we're going to have a war on vaccines. We're going to have a war on healthcare. I mean, not only are we cutting your health insurance or making it more expensive, we're now going to tell you, well, you know, I mean, this is a president, you can't even pronounce acetaminophen. So, and we're expecting, and we expect what he says to be medically relevant.
Yeah.
Remember, he told people to drink bleach during COVID.
The last segment we said, he said, windmills cause cancer. Didn't we, Kirsten? same person.
And by the way, you know, I don't believe that you have to believe everything a president says. Like, I'm not naive, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think everything that came out of Joe Biden's mouth or Barack Obama's mouth or whatever, Bill Clinton's mouth is, you know, they can stretch it. They could lie. I mean, mm-hmm. it's possible, right? So, but this is what I always knew those people would do. Here are the facts, or here's a set of facts. Here are experts in the field that say this, and here are people that say this. And this is the conclusion we have drawn, but you can draw your own conclusion, right?
Right.
Well, that's not what Donald Trump is saying, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I guess the folks that run the Department of Human Services, and our Surgeon General, and the Centers for Disease Control, and the National Institutes of Health. I mean, there are good people still there, but those scientific voices have been silenced. And when you start stacking all this stuff up against each other, you're just like, whoa, this has been a long year. And it's been 9 months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. So, and those are just federal issues. That doesn't count what we see going on in the states. But it's so there's two things. People either get, I've seen this. People were on my side of the aisle were so depressed last November after the election. And then Trump came in and some even got more depressed. But then other people, it sort of reinvigorated them, right? Like, okay, I've got to step up. And but that's great. And that's why it's been a long year, because it's been just always on. We're always on. There's a new thing to be ticked off about and to be fighting for, but it all is the same thread. But that gets tiring too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it tires you out emotionally and physically. Yeah. And most of us are doing this as a volunteer. And so we have to go to work and we have to raise a family and we have doctor's appointments and we have soccer practice and we have football practice and we might want to get around to golfing and we'd love to go on a vacation, but now we're trying to make ends meet. We haven't even talked about that prices have not come down. And I mean, none of that's happened. But, and then on top of it is this big emotional toll of whatever, you know, whatever the topic is, it's hard, but it's also a reason to get involved. And it's also a reason to be involved. And it's hard to stay up all the time because you're disheartened. I mean, we lost an election. How do we lose an election? There's a million ways I can explain how we lost that election, but it really doesn't matter because we're stuck with what we got and we got to figure out our way out of this. And everybody has a place in this, whether you're want to vote or you want to get involved or you want to march on the streets or you want to knock doors or you want to register people to vote or you want to do something. You want to help the homeless. That's great. You want to fight for women's reproductive rights. That's great. I mean, whatever it is that calls you, you know, you're sick and tired of South Carolina banning books and you want to do something about it and run for school board, do it. Or you just want to show up and give them hell at a school board meeting. Do it. That's invigorating. And it's also good for democracy because that's what we still have. And I believe we will keep, but we all have to work hard to keep it. Because we see right now how close we are to tipping that scale to a more authoritarian regime. I mean, it really is, it's a fine line. Mm-hmm. And we've got to do our part. Not to scare everybody, but I think it's a varying call that everybody has a role to play in this time. We're in the season we're in.
Yeah. And speaking of scary, do you guys follow the White House social media page?
Yeah.
Have you been seeing?
What a segue.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You see what I did there?
Yeah. I like that.
That
it's
is
spooky
scary.
Season.
Yeah. Yeah. Spooky season. Exactly.
So at the White House.
I wanted to bring this up because I feel like, you know, we all see the same posts, but how do we interpret the same posts? You know, so the stuff on the White House handle, it looks like a child is like being petty. There's no way that there is a grown adult behind those handles. The memes are so degrading, like the message is irresponsible. At least that's how I receive it. Like, there's no way that this is the White House and not like someone's personal, like, social account. Like, this is the government. You know, it's just crazy. And I feel like they're being intentional with the message and the communication.
Well, they are. Very intentional.
Very intentional. And the way that they're putting Trump as, like, on the Superman face or body and, like, it's just crazy about the stuff that they're even the narrative that they're portraying. And it is like they're funneling hate. And this is why you can't go to the store and just get groceries. This is why you can't go to the church and pray. This is why you can't do all these normal things, go to a parade, because they're funneling hate. They're not only hate, they're funneling misinformation. And they're giving it to the masses. Think about how many people is on social media. And so they're exactly why I say they're being intentional. And so I really feel like, you know, I joke and say other countries look at us and they chuckle, but I really do feel like they're looking at America and they're like judging, you know what I'm saying?
No,
judging
us. It's behavior unbecoming. Mm-hmm. A president, behavior unbecoming a leader. It's breaking things that were sort of social norms, right? Mm-hmm. Like you don't cross this line. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have an AI-generated video of the Democratic leader of the House with a damn sombrero on. Yeah. And I mean, you don't do that. I mean, you don't. I mean, a newspaper might do that,
right?
For fun, mm-hmm. but a president?
Like what? Right. I mean, the engagement that they are seeking is going to get them the wrong responses. Like the engagement that you're putting out there is what's going to stir people up to do the thoughts out loud. Like no one, mm-hmm. everyone is freely just going from 0 to 100. And then it's like you have such a responsibility. You're the leader of all of us. Like you ran, you wanted our support, you wanted our vote. You went out and talked to the masses, and then here you are funneling just negative stuff. It's crazy.
They just want power, and they just want to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And he either believes people are with him, and mm-hmm. I gotta say, some of it, you know, people are. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the majority, just this loud, you know, MAGA group. Mm-hmm. But it's all about power. It's all about enacting or exacting revenge on people or pushing through all the Project 2025 stuff just without due process, without processes. They're just doing it. And people should be alarmed. But if you look at this stuff coming out of the White House right now and are not offended, I am greatly worried about you.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, greatly worried about you. And, you know, do I hate Donald Trump? No, I don't hate anybody. I just am appalled.
Jay's a better person than I am.
I'm embarrassed. Well, I know, but like I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. Yeah. Embarrassed that this is the representation of our country.
Seriously. And they're using our tax dollars to do it. So that's even better.
Well,
yeah, there's that.
And, you know, I know a lot of people don't want to talk about Joe Biden, but I think Joe Biden, when he won, and I think everything he did in 4 years, where he continued to say, even though it's old-fashioned language, this is really in search of the fight and struggle for the soul of our nation. It's not very sexy, but you juxtapose that with military officials descending on communities, ICE agents ripping apart families, and by the way, grabbing up perfectly legal citizens. I mean, not just for an assault on the working people, assault on farmers, assault on healthcare, assault on education. I mean, just abolish the Department of Education. I mean, when you think about that, when you think of everything that is happening, it really, that's why I say that it's not good versus evil in those terms. It, to me, it is who we want to be and who are we. And it is a fight and a struggle for the soul of our nation. And in layman's terms, do you want to be like him? I mean, that's right. what it is. I mean, this yeah. is the choice. You want to be like him, mm-hmm. or is there another path? Mm-hmm. And I guess we have to make the other path attractive enough, right? And unfortunately, I think that's sort of the moment we're in. And mm-hmm. it's scary for a lot of people, but mm-hmm. it is a moment where good people, you know, people with good conscience can get together and make a difference. It really is that opportunity. And I hope people, whether they want to call themselves a Democrat or just want to help get more sane, common sense, sort of minded people elected, then I want them.
Normal people.
You know,
people.
However we can do it. What did you say, Kirsten?
Well, I was just saying, we had Tina Belgi, who's running for Greenville City Council.
Yeah, I love Tina.
On last time, and we were talking about having normal people run.
Yeah.
You know, regular.
Listen. Nothing special about me. I was born on a farm. Oh, no, I wasn't born on the farm. I was born in Jacksonville, Florida when my dad was in the Navy. But I grew up on a farm in rural Oklahoma in a community of 400 people. My family, they weren't generationally wealthy. They didn't, you know, they didn't settle. Folks in Charleston who've been here since the 1600s. I'm talking about like we weren't. You know, we were white in a white community, but there's nothing special. There's nothing special about me to be involved in politics. My mother was a social worker. My father worked up his way in management in a factory, and he farms. And so that's my family. My brother's a welder. My other brother's a farmer. And so nothing special. I didn't get to be here by birthright. I got to be here because this is something I wanted to do and cared a lot about. And so I say that to people every day. It doesn't, your experiences, normal, average, everyday people, there's nothing special about me. Nothing. And I chose to do this because I wanted to and because I cared and because I put in the time, effort, and energy to do it. Anyone can do it. Anyone can. Anyone can run for office. Anyone can get involved.
So
the richest person, it's not the person who's been here the longest.
Right.
It's not the person who has a pedigree, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
Not. And we need more real people doing this work.
Absolutely. Since we have been talking about real topics, let's end the show with a funny segment called Two Truths and a Lie. All right. So we're going to, the game of the rules, I'm going to share three statements. I want you guys to determine which one is false, which one is the lie. Huh? So, all right. Mm-hmm. And listen, I'm kind of nervous because I keep saying Jay's like the guru of politics, man. I really, I feel like...
We're convinced you're going to win this game.
Well, I mean, I'm going to feel bad when I lose. And then I'm like, he's an idiot.
So the first statement goes like this. The last government shutdown cost the U.S. economy approximately $11 billion. All right. That's the first one. Second, the 2019 government shutdown was mainly about funding for a border wall proposed by President Trump. Three, the 1995-96 shutdown was solely over tax increases that was proposed by President Clinton. So all of these are tailored to our hot topic, government shutdowns. One, two, or three.
I think the lie is number one. Only because I definitely feel like number two, it being about the border wall, I feel like that is... I feel like I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one.
Was it about tax increases?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that one could be. I mean, I don't know anything about that one.
I remember the 95-96 shutdown.
Of course you do, man. God.
I don't think it was about tax increases by President Clinton. I don't.
All right. What's the final answer?
My final answer, that's the lie. But I, well, could be wrong.
All right, Kirsten, what are you feeling?
I'm still sticking with number one. I mean, also feel like Jay's could be too, so
okay.
I don't know. Okay. But I'm going to go with number one.
All right, and the answer is Jay.
Really?
See?
He was so right and precise. He was like, he mentioned that he didn't think that it was about that, and it was not. So it was not about tax increases.
And you know, that breaks my perfect record.
Oh, yeah. She has had a perfect record, too. So when Emily listens to this, I know she's going to be showing all 32 teeth.
She'll be so excited. Yeah.
So for the record, that shutdown was due to budget disagreements between Congress and the president, specifically about Medicare, not tax increases.
Yep. And, you know, Gingrich, they in 94, you know, the Republicans took control of the Congress for the first time in 40 years. And so you had this big loggerhead between Clinton and Gingrich. But it all worked out in the end. We got a good budget deal out of it all and had the greatest 4 years we had had. Eliminated the debt deficit, largest job increase at the time, 21 million jobs, unemployment all-time low. And Bill Clinton and the Democrats made that happen.
I like how Jay just brings it all in, wraps it in a pretty bow.
Yes, yes.
The gift that keeps giving every time.
There's some advantage. The only advantage of getting older is I remember 1996.
Well, once again, thank you, Jay, for joining us. It has always been a pleasure. You are such a joy. You light up the room.
Happy to be with you both, and I look forward to Emily's return.
Exactly. I literally told her I miss her, man. I think we're both like, all right, man, it's time to come back.
She's a force to be reckoned
you've
with.
You've done an excellent job holding it all down.
Thank you, Jay. And for anybody else listening, keep it politically speaking until next time. See you guys.
Bye.
This is Kirsten Pruitt. Please subscribe to the show wherever you find podcasts and consider leaving us a rating. You can find links to our social media and YouTube page in the show notes. Thanks again for listening.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.